Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/picturelock. There's over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. You're listening to WERALP Arlington 96.7 FM. Welcome to another episode of the world-famous, award-winning Picture Lock. I'm your host, Kevin Sampson, filmmaker, film festival director, film critic, and lover of film and TV. You can find all the back episodes and so much more at picturelockshow.com. A little while back, I recorded a series of interviews for an online magazine I started called DMV Filmmaker. The mag focuses on filmmakers, actors, and everyone in between in the DC, Maryland, and Virginia area. So I'm going to start releasing those interviews over the next few Picture Lock episodes. So if you dig WTOP like I do, you've certainly heard Jason Fraley give a review. Whether it's of a film, a concert, play, or more, he's got it covered as the entertainment editor for WTOP. I'll speak with him today on the show. Also in the show, I'm talking with Kendra Rubenfield and Travis Hare of KRPR Media. They'll get you right if you're looking for a great publishing company in the DC area. But first, Guardians of the Galaxy 2 comes out this weekend, and I have some interviews to whet your taste bud. And that's all ahead on...
Ella.
No.
On KJ.
No. What's the name of the show?
Picture Lock.
Hope you're ready. It'll be here any minute. Is that a rifle?
You don't know what a rifle looks like?
It's just swords were your thing and guns were mine. But I guess we're both doing guns now. I just didn't know that.
Well, that's intense.
I see it within you. Fear. Jealousy. Betrayal. It is our duty to cleanse the universe of this weakness.
You know, they told me you people were conceited douchebags, but that isn't true at all.
Dude.
I'm using my wrong eye.
Talking with Ben Diesel. What appealed to you about the character of Groot?
I love the gentle giant aspect of Groot. I loved how enigmatic the character is. He's, he's been labeled the most interesting character in the Marvel Universe in some ways because he's so unique and so different. I loved the connection to Earth and the connection to nature, and that this character is a vassal of nature.
All right, we're talking with director James Gunn. James, Guardians 1 was a surprise smash. Could you talk a bit about creating the sequel?
I think I knew where I wanted to go before the first film was successful because I came up with the basic structure of a plot during the shooting of Guardians Volume 1. I also knew a lot before I ever even started shooting while I was writing the first screenplay about the background of Peter Quill and Yondu and all of that. So I knew what the general shape of the sequel was gonna be. I think the thing I didn't really know was, you know, was I going to tell the story of Peter Quill and his father as Volume 2, which I thought was the big reveal, or was I save it for a later time. And I decided, well, I think that's the best story I have at hand right now, so that's what I went with.
What do you think it is that makes Chris Pratt such a good Star-Lord?
I think when I was auditioning Star-Lord the first time around, I was looking for somebody who'd come in, do everything that was on the page, do it well, do it in a funny way, but also give that little something extra that made Peter Quill a little bit of a different character. And I think Chris came in and did that immediately. I think Chris is a very unique movie star in that he is a combination of being a big masculine guy, but also a very vulnerable guy. He has a vulnerability that, say, the classic movie stars sort of hint at, whether it's Humphrey Bogart or Gary Cooper, but that Chris really brings that to life on the screen. And I think that's what makes him a truly modern day movie star.
All right, and that's all I have for Guardians of the Galaxy 2. It's out in theaters today. Make sure you go and check it out. I'm sure that it's going to be a smash, $1 million, probably hit the $1 billion mark within 2 weeks.
Hey, this is Tim Gordon, president of the Washington, D.C. Area Film Critics Association. You guys are listening to Kevin Sampson on Picture Lock.
You're listening to Picture Lock. I'm your host, Kevin Sampson. And being on this PR kick, I got to tell you, you really need a good PR or marketing firm behind you if you're trying to get out there as a filmmaker with your film, a film festival. And I have an amazing company that I have used myself to help do that. KRPR is a PR and marketing firm specializing in creating platforms from which their clients can grow bigger. And I love it just says you, period, bigger. Kendra Rubenfield and Travis Hare. Welcome to Picture Lock.
Thank you so much for having us on, Kevin. It's an honor. We are big fans of all the work that you do and are just thrilled to be on your show.
Yeah, thank you for having us. This is great.
It's my pleasure. You know, can I brag on you guys? You didn't know I was going to do that at the top of the hour. So as I said, as a director of the Rosebud Film Festival, we use KRPR to help us to get, submissions as well as actually selling tickets. We went from 70 submissions that first year I took over to in the second year using you guys, over 100 submissions. So it was a big jump. But let me tell you guys, anybody listening, the thing that I love about KRPR the most is that they send these cards in the mail, snail mail, just to say, thank you for being our client. These guys really actually care. And I think that's what I love about you guys so much. So it's my pleasure to have you guys on.
Well, thank you so much, Kevin. And we will say that having a strong product is always,
makes our job easier.
Exactly.
All right. So, as you all know, I like to start at the beginning. My first question I like to start out with is, when did you first fall in love with film?
Oh, man.
I'll let Kendra take this one.
I mean, when I was born? well, I am an only child. And so I think that while other people were playing with their brothers and sisters, I was watching movies starting at a young age. My dad used to tape movies off the television for me, and it was so funny. This is back in the day of VCR recordings, and he would pause every time there was a commercial. So it was basically turn into an actual film. It was great. It was like a DVD before DVDs existed, or streaming before streaming existed.
Uh-huh.
He would also, I should mention, pause the recording every time there was a sex scene. So as to make movies more appropriate. But I've been watching movies forever, and there's a period of time, actually a long period of time, I'd say from high school to college, that I really wanted to be a filmmaker, and that was the direction that I was going in life, and went to college for it. But kind of switched gears there post college. Film has always been very influential in my life. I think I've learned a lot about the world through film.
Mm-hmm.
I think the art of film is being able to transport you to another place and also give you insight into other people's perspectives. So that has always helped me whenever I was trying to understand something or didn't even know something, I've learned a lot through film. And also I think it's kind of formed my worldview to a certain extent. I go back and watch films that I used to watch as a kid, and I realized, oh my gosh, that's kind of where my values were established. I mean, I'm sure, props to my parents, but a lot of the films that I watched as a kid, I think I kind of, I view the world from that perspective.
Yeah, I have to have you guys come back on where we just geek out on film, because I'd love to know what some of those films are.
Okay.
Travis, what about you, man? You can't escape this first question.
Okay, I won't escape it. I think for me, film has always been something of, many people, just a means of escape. certainly I find it as something that I constantly go to in my life when I just need some time alone or want to, you know, completely disappear from the reality that I'm in and just immerse myself in another one. And that's always what it has been for me. I don't want anybody to talk to me while there's a movie on. I don't want there to be any interruptions. I don't want to hear anybody eat popcorn. Like, I want to live in what I'm watching it. And I yearn for that anytime I sort of feel overwhelmed or need that escape. So it's always kind of been that place for me. Mm-hmm. And then I think, you know, upon meeting Kendra many years ago, who had a real strong film background, that was eye-opening for me in terms of learning more about the technical side of it, or, you know, learning to watch an actor at work. And I think that just kind of opened the door, you know, in my mind quite a bit more. So, yeah, it's always kind of served as that for me.
I could totally relate to that. I mean, who doesn't love just getting engrossed in a good movie? And, you know, it's really funny, but if I want to relieve stress, I go to the movie theater. Like, that helps. That's my zen. That just brings me to back to zero. So
I feel totally exactly the same way.
All right. So, you know, you guys kind of gave a little bit about your background. And maybe Kendra, for you, your interest with PR started with the Our City Film Festival, and then it turned into this magnificent company that you guys have. Could you talk a little bit about your work with Our City and how it morphed into KRPR?
Absolutely. Yeah, sure. So I guess back in 2007, I was working at a great nonprofit here in D.C. That's devoted to affordable housing and bringing communities together in Washington. And I was hired as sort of a program director, and at the time was, you know, in my 20s, and was just kind of fresh from college, fresh from film school, and really valuing the ability of film to reach new audiences and to, you know, tell stories in ways that, you know, perhaps are more difficult to understand if you're just talking or reading. So one of the tasks that Yahad had assigned me was to bring in a younger base. And I had thought about it, and, you know, given my background in film, I thought, you know, what better to do this than to start a film festival that could incorporate the themes of Yahad, which was, you know, like I mentioned, bringing communities together and preserving communities in Washington, D.C. So we started Our City Film Festival. It started out in the back of Busboys and Poets on 14th and V in the Langston Room, and it expanded to the Atlas Performing Arts Center. And so, you know, if you're not familiar with that, it's, you know, probably a 70-seat theater to about probably like 300, 200, yeah, 250, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
In, you know, about, I think it was about over 6 years or something. And we screened, you know, documentaries, narratives, films that were about or take place in Washington, D.C. in order to encourage pride in the city's culture, residents, history, et cetera. You know, I'm from D.C. originally and had always kind of I held a bit of a grudge watching movies that never really took place in D.C. unless they had a political twist to them. You know, there always had to be some sort of, you know, that we always had the Capitol, we always had the monuments and you know, with some spy drama or something of that nature. But you never really saw the real D.C., you know, the city where people live. And so that was kind of the direction that we went with a lot of the submissions, was highlighting films that showed that perspective of the city. And mm-hmm. in so doing, bringing people into the fold of Yahad and telling them a little bit more about the work that we did in affordable housing and community building. So that's kind of, you know, where it started. And I worked at Yahad for about 8 years and, like, you know, working on that work as well as the film festival every year. And during that time, really loved that time of year when I got to program and market the film festival and reach new audiences. So I actually decided to go back to school, got my master's at Johns Hopkins in communications while still working at Yahad, and decided, maybe if I could take on some consulting here and there, that would be kind of neat. And sure enough, my first client was a filmmaker in D.C. who had, screened at the festival a few years back and asked me to promote one of his first productions. So we did that. I did that. And from there, kind of gathered more clients and got to the point where it was enough to leave Yahad and, quit that job and start KRPR full time, where, we weren't just doing things. I wasn't doing things on the side. It was a full time gig. And around that same time, Travis joined me as well, where, we both basically went full time and devoted ourselves to KRPR.
You're listening to Picture Lock. I'm your host, Kevin Sampson. I'm talking with the co-principals of KRPR, Kendra Rubenfield and Travis Hare. That's a awesome just story in and of itself of becoming a full-time entrepreneur. I got to salute you guys. That's so cool. I'm serious. I'm serious. Oh, man. Okay. Well, pretty soon.
Well,
you know
how it is, Kevin. I mean, you're an entrepreneur as well.
Exactly, but you guys are actually doing it day to day. I'm just this guy behind the microphone that appears at different film festivals and all that kind of stuff, but you found a way to make it work, which I think is awesome. And obviously we were able to hear how you're so passionate about filmmaking, the process and all that good stuff. But what better a way to be around it and promote it than through, PR?
Yeah, it's a really fortunate place to be, and it's really fun to get to take that passion and then also, use it to actually help promote people and the good work they're doing, and particularly for those in the Washington area who don't always have such a strong connection to the film industry. Helping them make those inroads and connections. So yeah, we feel very fortunate to be in that position for sure.
So let's talk about, what you guys do with KRPR, because you have clients that range from opera companies to medical practices, nonprofits. And so, just looking at your client list, you have Library of Congress, DC Public Library, DuPont Underground, you have DC Shorts Film Festival, Real Independent Film Festival, Skyrocket Productions. There's so many clients that you all have that, if you live in the DC area, is definitely well-known brands. So in terms of, let's say, if I'm a filmmaker or a film festival director or anything like that, and I'm listening and I'm thinking, maybe I do need to go with a PR and marketing firm. Why should people come to you guys? How would you help me?
Well, I think, the best way to answer that question is that we do have a lot of experience, particularly in that area. There's a lot of great PR firms here in Washington, D.C. Some of them specialize in things. Some of them are more general. In terms of specifically with filmmakers, as you just heard, Kendra has such a strong background, someone who started her own film festival and made her own films in the past. So we really, get where filmmakers are coming from. And then outside of that, we have been doing this from the PR angle for long enough now that, we've made lots of inroads in those communities. We know the writers who are interested in those stories or, which news outlets to contact, depending on what the film is about. We're really good at looking for different routes to take in terms of getting PR, not just reaching out to the guy who you hope to get a good review from, but, if your film is about baseball, then we're going to look at sports writers. If your film is about, politics, then we're going to look at those writers. So not just not just specifically about film, but looking at all the different angles in which your film might be interested and all the different audiences. I think just having the background and having done this for so long, we've got a really strong connection to those communities, those writers, those different places to help promote those films.
Yeah, and I agree with you. You know, that might have been a tough question and sounded like I was being harsh, but obviously I've given you glory, glaring praises just in terms of the work that we've done together, and I can't recommend you guys enough. So I think, but it's exactly what you said. I'm glad that you were able to put it together like that, Travis, because I think you guys think outside of the box, and that's what's really refreshing. You guys, when I've worked with you in the past, it's you're thinking about different angles, more or different communities as well, other than just like a set community that might make sense because it is a community. But you know what? How can I also tie in X community or Y community? So I do think you guys think outside of the box, which is really awesome. One of the good things, as we're talking right now, we should really hit on is how can people get in contact with you?
Oh, well, you can check out our website, www.krprllc.com, and that has all our contact information, email, phone call, you know, whatever works best. And, you know, what we usually do is we talk to this potential, you know, whomever this potential client is, get a feel for what they're looking for, seeing, you know, if that's in our wheelhouse. And, you know, one thing that we really do try to do is, well, we try to take on clients that we actually have passion around what they're doing, because we believe that, you know, that's really where our best work comes from, is when we're really fans of what we're trying to publicize. Mm-hmm. So it comes more naturally. And we also obviously take into account whether or not we think we can do what the potential client is looking for. You know, our worst fear is that we take on a client that we're not able to deliver for. So we try not to do that ever. And, you know, I think that depending on what the project is, it lends itself either well to publicizing, or, you know, There's certain clients that we'll talk to where we'll say, you know, you don't need us. You're doing great. You know, keep that up. Keep doing what you're doing. Others will say, you know, okay, let's rebrand. Or sounds like you have an awesome product. And, you know, I think it's important to focus on this audience, you know. Or certain people come to us and they just want, like you, Kevin, you know, you wanted to build your submission base. So that's what we looked at. You know, you were filling the theater. You didn't really need that many, you know, as we say, butts and seats, but you really needed a push on the submission. So that's where we focused our energy. We take a good amount of time trying to sort of, you know, audit the issues at hand and then go from there.
All right. Well, unfortunately, we got to kind of wrap things up here, but you've been listening to PixRock. I'm your host, Kevin Sampson, talking with the co-principals of KRPR. Guys, I just want to thank you for coming on. Again, I give it the Picture Lock stamp of approval. You guys are just a wonderful, wonderful company. Thanks so much for coming on. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, it was a total delight.
Let's take a break for Stay Tuned.
Hey, everybody. I appreciate everyone that listens to the Picture Lock podcast. And for you, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. If you're like me, then it's been a while since you've sat down and read a book, but it hasn't been long since you listened to a podcast. In fact, you're listening to one right now. Why? Because you're able to be entertained, informed, or educated on the go. That's kind of how I like my books as well. With Audible.com, I can listen to Joseph Campbell's The Hero with a Thousand Faces or Robert McKee's story when I'm in the mood for learning about the craft, or Malcolm Gladwell's The Tipping Point when I'm trying to learn how to be a better influencer. The point is, a wealth of knowledge is at your fingertips. All you have to do is go to audibletrial.com/picturelock for a free 30-day trial. It's that easy. Again, that's audibletrial.com/picturelock for a free 30-day trial to Audible. Ride sharing is all the rave these days. Wherever you're headed, count on Lyft for rides and minutes. Whether you're riding solo or with friends, with Lyft, you've got options. get picked up by one of their drivers who will get you where you need to go. When the ride ends, just pay and rate your driver through your phone. It's quick, it's easy, and just a couple taps away. Visit Lyft.com for more details. And if you haven't tried Lyft yet, but want to give it a whirl with a $50 ride credit, sign up at Lyft.com/invited/picturelockshow. That's right. If you're a new member to Lyft and in an eligible market, you can get a $50 ride credit with Picture Lock. Again, that's Lyft.com/invited/picturelockshow for a free $50 ride credit.
This is Logan Lerman. I play Marcus Messner in Indignation, and you are listening to Picture Lock.
Jason, first off, thanks for coming on DMV Filmmaker.
Thanks for having me, Kevin. We started Picture Lock together.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. We started that, and you know, in honor of that, if you go back to that episode, I'm wearing, I think, close to the same top.
I might be too.
Because I was like, all right, I got to salute, you know, the first Picture Lock episode.
Yeah, we did that on purpose.
Exactly. All right, so before we get started, I wanted to know, did you realize when you Googled Jason Fraley, you come up?
I would hope so, right? I don't know how many there are out there, but...
I don't know either, but when...
Other Jasons, if you're watching, thanks for Googling, I guess.
But. Exactly. When you do Kevin Sampson, there's, like, the writer from, like, the UK. There's, like, football player.
Well, yours is a little more of a standard name, you know. Sampson, Kevin.
I guess so. But Jason Fraley, there's not many more Fraleys. Anyways, I thought that was cool. Maybe. I'm jealous because as I was doing my research and all that good stuff, I was like... Wow, Jason is the man. Google his name and like all these articles come up.
I don't know. It's just because we crank one out like every day. It's more volume, I guess. But it should be Kevin coming up because, you know, he's launching all these different shows and stuff. You're like Renaissance Man of Arlington.
I guess so. One day. All right, so let's get into this. You're a homegrown DMV filmmaker.
Homegrown.
Grew up in Frederick, Maryland, yep. Studied journalism at University of Maryland, grad school with me.
AU,
right? And then you went to become the film critic at WTOP and now the entertainment editor
right.
for WTOP.
Yep. So correct on all fronts.
See, I Googled you. All right, so before we get into all that, take us back to when you first fell in love with film, but more specifically, take us back to... Boy by Himself.
You know, you found Boy by Himself online? Well, the video's not on it. Okay. So it kind of started, you know, we're all basically, I guess, products of our, not only our parents, but our grandparents, if we're lucky enough to know them, right? So both my dad's parents and my mom's parents were, whenever they would take us, they would, you know, we would just be do a really creative stuff. I remember, before I even knew how to write, I remember standing in the kitchen, my grandma would be at the typewriter, and we would... you know, dictate stories to her, and she would, you know, type up the stories. And I have a twin brother, fraternal twin Josh, who lives up in Frederick, and he was sort of the illustrator, and I was the author, and we made books before we really knew how to write, thanks to the grandparents. But then the thing you're alluding to was called Boy by Himself, which was we went to see Home Alone. We were probably, I was born in 84, so I guess 1990 would have been like six, right?
Yeah.
We went in, it wasn't snowing. We came out, it was magical because it was snowing, you know.
Oh, wow.
Macaulay Culkin's our age, so we're just geeking out with that, you know what I mean?
Right.
It was like the perfect age to go watch something funny like that. But so we went home and we cranked out a whole film series with the great original title, Boy by Himself. It was basically just me robbing my brother, you know. His house.
Nice.
So it was just parents and grandparents letting us do that with the old camcorders, except it'd be the big VHS tape
right,
and thing.
With the light on the top, yeah. Right.
And you'd have to, you kind of had to edit in camera, right? We didn't have Final Cut in the late 80s,
right.
Early 90s. We just looked to the camera and go, cut, Grandpa. You know, so, but literally, that's how we got into it.
Grandpa.
Yeah.
And
then, you know, when you got in high school, they had the smaller tapes where you put inside the VHS tape and it would go, and it would close. You know what I mean? You remember them.
I remember.
Like, all through middle school, high school, it was, you know, I guess it was almost anti-jock of us to do this, but right. we would kind of break some stereotypes and make some, we'd go home and shoot movies. So,
is there a possibility that Boy by Himself will ever see the light of day? Is it on YouTube?
It's not on YouTube, but it's currently at, those grandparents are still alive. It's on their shelf in Damascus. So if you really wanted to, to go hunting, I'm sure really you could find a clip of it. Yeah,
exactly. All right.
There's a shot of me standing decked out in all black. My brother's playing the piano all ominously in the background. It's pretty setting up traps. Now,
if I show up at your grandparents' house, is that going to be strange if I'm like, hey,
they
I'm
might
Jason.
Remember you from the thesis shoot.
That's true.
So maybe,
that is
yeah.
true. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, that's good. All right. So Jason, you know, back in the day, I don't know about you. For me, I can't necessarily pinpoint what film stood out to me, you know, as a kid.
Right.
But is there a seminal film? Is there something that it was like you were like, oh, I love film.
More? You mean like more as a childhood? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I feel like as kids, everyone sort of has sort of the same ones they gravitate toward. You know, like I loved Indiana Jones when I was a kid
right.
and had the Star Wars bed sheets and, you know, Back to the Future, Forrest Gump, those kind of movies that kind of were coming out when we were...
book bag.
Yeah. So. You know, when you're a kid, it's like it's all about like the big blockbuster guys. It's like Spielberg, Lucas, and Zemeckis, you know, as a kid growing up in the 80s and early 90s, right?
Right, right.
And then after a while, you start watching special features of other stuff, and then you start going into your Pulp Fictions, and then you start discovering Scorsese and all that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? So yeah, no. But as a kid, it was, you know, Indy was my hero. I wanted the Holy Grail.
Were you always were you always attracted to film? Like for me personally, when I was watching films, I there was always some kind of attraction there.
Yeah.
Was it always there for you, or?
Oh yeah, I've always loved movies. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, definitely.
Okay. All right. Cool.
I can't remember the first one I went to. It was probably either like Land Before the Time or Little Mermaid or something around that era. You know what I mean?
Nice.
Late 80s. Yeah.
Nice. All right. So what led you to study at the University of Maryland? And not only that, what were some of your biggest takeaways? Because in your bio, you did talk about one of those things. Talk about
it. Oh, Maryland. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, so I went there for journalism because I always wanted to be... You know, I thought I wanted to be a sports writer because I, you know, played football and baseball in high school, and that's actually how I got into journalism. Was a reporter at the Frederick News Post, Josh
nice.
Smith, he's the man. Was interviewing me on the sidelines after like a playoff game where I had an interception or whatever, and so he like wanted to interview me. And as we're talking, I was like, you know, I read the school paper in high school. Could I intern for you? You know, so I started doing stringer work for the Frederick News Post, the little local paper
nice.
Up there, and then I was like, okay, Maryland would be a good spot to maybe get some internships because they had a really good journalism program down there. And, covered the volleyball, wrestling, and baseball beats for the Diamondback, which is the newspaper there. And just was thinking about doing the sports thing. Interned at the Baltimore Sun, interned at USA Today, thinking it was going to be the
wow.
sports track. I guess a couple things shifted it. When I was at the Sun, I sort of started mentoring under this guy named Michael Srego. He was their film critic up there. And I think he was like the first regular critic for Rolling Stone, like back in the day.
Mm.
And he was like, he was obsessed with the Wild Bunch. So he got me into Peckinpah. And I remember they thought Liz Taylor was going her deathbed. She ended up living like 6 more years. But I was like, man, come on, my big piece for the Sun.
No.
I can't run it. I mean, I was glad she was living, but they had me put together this little like video tribute montage to Liz Taylor because they wanted it ready. You know, journalism does obits before people die.
Right.
So I just started combing through all these old Liz Taylor movies, which really got me into George Stevens. So it's like Giant, which is James Dean's last movie. You know,
mm-hmm.
Place in the Sun, all those great Liz Taylor movies, Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, all that stuff.
Right.
So I would say it was sort of that was happening in the internships, but then more importantly, it definitely was at Maryland. I kind of created a film minor. You know, journalism was a major, but you had to pick like sort of a concentration or a minor, and I just always loved movies. Like we'd be done our flag football game or whatever, and then I'd run to the library and watch Duck Soup on a little two-wheeler, because I don't know why, I love movies.
Yeah.
And so I had some film theory classes with this guy named Joseph Smith, and... Joseph Miller. Joseph Smith's Pocahontas.
Yeah.
But Joseph Miller. And this mustache guy, knew his stuff, and I just fell in love. I remember we were sitting there watching, which one was it? You know, you watch Citizen Kane and all that stuff. But the one that I remember first, like, really blowing my mind was we were watching The Searchers, right? And so I'm sitting there watching it the first time, and it reminded me of my grandpa who, you know, just like any Saturday morning cowboy and Indian flick or whatever, you know?
Right.
And so I'm sitting there watching, and I was like, well, that was a fun John Wayne, John Ford movie. It was like a fun little romp, whatever, Natalie Wood, whatever. But then I'll never forget, he went up there into the front of the room and just broke down the first, literally, even in the first 10 minutes, there was a whole love affair between John Wayne and Martha, his sister-in-law.
Right.
There was like a romantic past, but it's not in the script. It's all done visually by how, you know, where the blocking is. They're sitting next to each other at the table, or they reach for a lamp, you know, above the fireplace together. And, and then I'm like, well, wait a minute. He's kind of going from Confederate grays and reds to Union blues throughout the movie. Like, even the costume are involved, and just, I remember, it just blew me away that you could do so much under the surface just by how you group characters in a shot, and that blew me away. And then, of course, all the other great movies that
frame within a frame, he's outside of the door, he can't come in because he's from the outside world.
It's so much, and to me, that's why we're talking a lot about Westerns, which is, I didn't know we'd be doing, but anyway, like, I think it's like a lot of the American conflict is right in there, right? It's the rugged individualist wanting to go west, but then once you get there, right, you want to settle down and you have to make a community and you build churches and everything else and you know, and schools and everything. It's the classic Liberty Valance, Jimmy Stewart versus John Wayne thing, you know. so the idea that you could do all these themes in this movie. So yeah, John Ford, The Searchers is what kind of opened my eyes.
Right.
And then after that, it was full on obsession with Hitchcock for the rest of my life. You know? Vertigo is my, as you know, like my eternal obsession. I love that movie.
Yeah, that's awesome. But you know what I think is so cool is, you know, now I'm 32.
I'm 31, so we're on the same page.
Yeah. Right. And so now life, we're starting to get to that age where, like, suddenly you're starting to learn and you're starting to see how, like, what you just said, being the scriptwriter at the, you know, little Frederick newspaper, you never knew that that might prepare you for WTOP.
Right.
How crazy is that? In the meantime, like, you know, you got this love for cinema slowly developing and then just coming around to what it is today. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's why, like, the best advice, like, you could give to anyone that age is just, like, go do internships, do all that stuff, because you never know how it's going to prepare you, even if you think you're going to be, you know, I had no idea I'd be doing movie reviews on the radio, you know?
Right.
I was a print major in college that was writing Stringer for Sports because I was playing football, and I, you know, like, that, you never know where it's going to take you.
Right.
But so I would just say dive into, like, your passion, like, you know.
That's great advice, actually.
And more than just what everyone sees publicly, like the internships and everything else, I think what's 19,000 times more important is what you do sort of on your free time. So, like, I just remember printing off best lists and literally going one by one, highlighting them off, taking notes. Remember the serial killer in Seven? There's like all the all the composition notebooks of chicken scrawl, weird things. Okay, well, take away the serial killer aspect and put it in towards cinema. But that's what it looked like. It was just like, all right, this is what makes Citizen Kane great. This is, you know,
right,
and this is Lawrence of Arabia. And you just, like, I just went through, I really wanted to know, like, what makes the great movies great? What there's gotta be some secret here. What is it? And so I started noticing all this cool stuff that I don't think some people hadn't even put online yet. So it was pretty cool. So I started a blog called The Film Spectrum, and there we go.
Exactly. which The Film Spectrum is like a very in-depth analysis of films. So I definitely would, you know, suggest anybody that wants to get an in-depth view of it. But
I haven't added to it much lately, but
yeah, well, you're a little busy now. But how did you get that started? Did you have like volumes already written or you know?
Right. I mean, I guess sort of in college, I wrote, you're going to think I'm absolutely insane, but I like sat down, I wrote out like 300 really, like what you see on there.
Right.
About 300 of different classic movies from basically every best list you could think of. There's only, I think only about 100 of them ever made it up on the site, you know, were proofread and had screen grabs and stuff enough. I was going to write a book, I guess, about, you know, what makes all these great movies great.
Right.
So there's literally boxes in like a cabinet in my apartment of like unposted long analyses of like every classic movie you could think
of. So these are all handwritten?
No, they're typed.
Okay.
Yeah.
They're typed out.
They're typed.
Are they saved to a computer? Because Because honestly,
they're printed out and they're saved and emailed to myself and printed and printed out like hard copy versions in case the computer crashed.
Okay, you hear it here first, folks. Like DMV filmmaker,
the secret hidden reviews.
Yes, Jason Fraley is going to put a book together. I'm gonna be the one to push him to do it. Okay. But this is gonna be awesome.
That would be cool. So yeah, I don't know. Eventually, just found a WordPress site and just started throwing them up. But you know, you've seen it. They're like it takes some time to get them edited and you know all the screenshots up because you're referencing actual frames of movies from Billy Wilder to Coppola to everybody. You know, so you want to make sure you do them justice. So yeah, I think only about a third of them ever made it up before the TOP thing started.
So. Yeah, so let's get into that. WTOP is Washington D.C.'s all news formatted broadcast station.
D station in DC, baby.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. To me, like, if you're trying to listen to the news, you're going to go to WTOP. All right, so.
Just won a National Murrow again.
Plug it.
That's all the anchors, man. It's just an awesome news station. It's the best.
It is. I enjoy it. You know, it's funny because there we go again, talking about our age and all that good stuff. Like, now I feel like. How did I become my father? I said I wasn't going to be listening to the news on the way to work.
We and that's all like, become our parents. That's why The Godfather's genius.
Exactly.
It really is. You fight it as much as we like, you know, you all become them.
Right. All right. So let's talk about your rise to becoming a film critic and now, you know, the entertainment editor. So
you mean it's TOP specifically?
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
I guess when I started at TOP in fall 2008. I took the job right after I got out of the journalism school at Maryland. So it was like the first undergrad job.
Yeah.
I was doing it part-time because actually we were both at AU film school and getting our master's at the same time. So it was 3 years there of just part-time where I've been there 7 total now, which is crazy to me. Mm. But 3 years part-time writing. It was just, you know, nuts and bolts writing the news show for the two anchors. It was Mike and Bruce at the time, Mike Moss and Bruce Allen. Now it's Mike and Joan. But I'd come in, the editor would slap a stack of newspaper stories on the desk, and you just have to take something really jargony and police blottery, processy sounding and whip it into something creative and come up with cool headlines, you know. And so, and it was 4 a.m. to noon shift, so that was brutal, but you had to pay the bill somehow.
Yeah.
So just sort of doing that part-time. And I guess while we were doing it, we used to play a game where our my colleagues, Adam Tuss, who's on Channel 4 now, and Mike Gartell, who runs some websites for CBS, but they used to do this game where they would call out a year and I would yell out the best picture back to them. It was that's my little Rain Man party trick.
Right.
And so we just would do it, you know, just as coworkers. But one day a guy from the Washington Post happened to be in there doing a feature on TOP, and like that was like his whole lead. Like you never know all the weird skills that these night owls have. Like there's this one guy who knows movie trivia, and there's this other person. You know what I mean? Like
right.
And so that sort of built a little bit of a buzz in there that I sort of knew what I was doing.
They called you a savant.
Well, yeah.
1978. Okay.
Their word. Oh, 78's the deer hunter, man. Come on.
It's amazing.
But also Halloween, and we're in Halloween right now. So I guess everyone around the station, I guess, started to know I was in love with movies. But we had an actual movie critic at the time, Joe Barber. Great guy. Sweet guy. He actually died pretty young. I can't remember how old he was, but I want to say he was maybe in his 50s or early 60s, something like that. Passed away, I think, something with the kidney disease or something. So he passed away right around the same time that, graduated from grad school. So it was this sort of homegrown guy that we all knew and were all friends because I was writing the news copy, who they all knew just from casual banter that, you know, I loved movies so much. Right around the same time that I'd just finished the master's in film, had done this Film Spectrum website, which was purely couldn't have foreseen this guy was going to die. Joe Barber was going to die. Like back when I started writing all that, it's the preparation meets opportunity thing. And so it was like all this convergence, and all of a sudden our boss, also a new boss, was taking over because the guy that built TOP, Jim Farley, was retiring. So Laurie Cantillo was coming in. Mm-hmm. So it was this convergence of all these things, sort of right place, right time. And I went in there and said, well, I know we've kind of been like a month without a movie critic now. Could I take a stab at it? And she, I showed her some stuff on the blog, and she's like, yeah, let's give the kid a shot. Why not? And I didn't have a day to do it. I was still writing. I was writing full time, you know, on the news desk at that point. and just kind of doing the reviews on my own time. But she was like, "Hey, let's give him a shot."
Yeah.
And she was like, pick something good, or, you know, let's see what he have." And I was like, "I'm going to pick a silent movie as my first radio review," just because it was the gutsiest thing I could think of. It was The Artist that wound up winning Best Picture.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah, The Artist was my first review for T.O.P. And I can't back and listen to the piece now because it just sounds, you know, stupid. I didn't pronounce things properly. I probably still don't, but, you know, whatever.
Right.
We're just learning on the fly, baby.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. So from there, now, you know, going to entertainment itself, like, that's a huge step. How did you take that step?
So I would say... So, you know, it was like 3 years as just news writer. Then I would say it was another 3 years where it was full-time news writer for the morning drive show while also doing reviews on Fridays, you know. So I'd say for the last like 4 or 5 years, I've been like our movie critic that was only on Fridays. And then the entertainment thing, the full-time entertainment editor has only been, I'd say, about a year now. I think I started last December.
Yeah.
So that was just our old entertainment editor, Alicia Lozano, decided she was moving to LA. And so they said an opening was up and whoever wants to apply can. And I was like, well, I'm already reviewing our movies on Friday. Let's give it a shot.
Nice.
So now it's all the arts in DC. It's it's movies. Still got the movies, but that'll always be my passion. But now it's plays at the Kennedy Center and Arena Stage and National Theater and Warner Theater. And then it's concerts where, you know, at the Birchmere or 930 Club or whatever, wherever the shows are.
Right.
Books, celebrities come to town, and you know how it is with those radio tours. It just, now I feel it started with, like, I felt like I was trying to reach out and figure out how am I going to do a there's 30 days in a month. How do I do a story once a day as our cover story, both on air and online? What am I going to do? And then now it's funny how fast the Google Calendar fills up, and now it's almost like they come to us. They send us press releases because, you know. So it's taken like a year to build that, but.
But that's incredible. So what with so much that you have to do, so much that you have to kind of take on, so much that you have to plan out and scheduling, like, what do you just enjoy the most about your job?
Just sort of getting to do what you love for a living. Yeah. I mean, there's always the double-edged sword things that you grapple with, like, you know, all right, well, I spent so much time on that great piece. Now, all right, what have you done for me lately? You got to do a story tomorrow.
Right.
Let's see, you know, so I can sort of make my own hours a little now, depending what's going on day to day. If I got an interview early in the morning, or if there's like a screening at night, that's great. But at the same time, then it's like a constant beast you have to feed. You know, you're on the red carpets on Monday and then a film screening on Tuesday. And then, and so maybe I don't, let's say, get to see as many movies as I want to that week.
Right.
If I was just, you know, just a movie critic, I could knock out a couple, like four in a week. So,
yeah.
But, you know, it's a good problem to have, let's say. So, yeah, I think the part that I love the most is just, you know, oh, I'm going in and I'm going to, you know, knock out a movie review today. Like, that's pretty cool to me.
Yeah.
I personally like when we get to do, you know, sort of geek out on movie history type stuff. Like, if they're like, I'm trying to think, like, Scorsese spoke at the Kennedy Center and like broke down Vertigo for everybody, and I always got to go there and watch. Like, that's cool. Getting to
Friedkin, you know.
That was actually just recently. Yeah, so William Friedkin, director of The Exorcist and The French Connection, you know, Skyped. I thought it was going to be like a 10-minute, just we're going to preview that he's coming to The Exorcist steps, and instead he Skyped for an hour. Like, we just kept talking about. Part of that was just we could tell we were like two movie guys just geeking out, like, you know.
But you know, okay, so you've had a couple of incidents like that, because American Gigolo, right? Didn't you have that same kind of thing?
John Turturro.
Yeah,
yeah.
And you just started kind of geeking out, but he was like,
yeah.
I think that's so awesome, because you can tell when someone is authentic, someone is really passionate about it, and then you look at that, and it's like, these are like our heroes, right? You know, like,
I'd say that's
an hour conversation.
That is the coolest thing. Or I've got to go talk to George Stevens Jr., who founded the AFI, you know, the son of George Stevens, the director of Shane and Giant and all those. But, stuff like that, or, you know, God, I've forgotten more. Like, it's, you know, William Shatner, Aretha Franklin, Pink Floyd, the Eagles, Joe Walsh, the Eagles.
Right.
Spielberg, Tom Hanks, Kevin Spacey, Dick Cavett, John Stewart. You know, it's like, it's amazing. You're like, wait a minute, did I just talk to them today?
Right.
But kind of like, Larry King talked to me for an hour. I was like, what the? I don't even know you were really coming in today, but let's just wing it. And then just like hear how they do their interviews. So like, he says he never prepared a question in his life. He said he would maybe like read up on the person so he like had a knowledge of him, but just kind of wing it and see where the conversation goes, which is really cool. Or Dick Cavett, who said that he, when he first started interviewing like this, he would like have a whole list of questions prepared. So he'd be talking to a movie star like Liz Taylor or something, and she'd be like in the middle of a really cool story, but he'd be focused on his next question. So she'd be like, and then I opened this trunk and you'll never believe what was in it. And then he goes, yeah, so what are your hobbies? So he said like eventually he started learning like to just like, so then later he learned that when he interviewed like Katharine Hepburn, I'm not going to prepare anything and we're just going to go with it.
Right.
We interviewed Anderson Cooper because he had a show at Warner Theater recently.
Okay.
He said his strategy is the opposite. He wants to have all the questions. So it's just different philosophies.
Yeah.
I think the key is sort of being flexible to, you know, have it prepared. So you have, like, it's like when you make a movie, right?
Right.
Have it storyboarded. Exactly. But you want to catch the happy accidents. If the car flies through and almost runs over John Voight and Dustin Hoffman, you want to keep what, I'm walking here in the movie.
Right. Exactly.
You know what I mean? Stuff like that.
So we're both members of the Washington, D.C. Area Film Critics Association.
WAFCA,
yes. You're also a Broadcast Film Critics Association member. Now, what people might not understand and know is that that also allows you to go to the People's Choice Awards, right?
I've never actually gone to
the I was going to ask you. Have you been
it's
to
like,
it
It's like it's the Critics' Choice.
The Critics' Choice Awards, yeah.
People's is something different. But.
Right.
No, I haven't been to it yet, but I've, you know, I fill out the ballots and when all that comes around, but those organizations are great. I kind of subtitled the people that send me the DVDs in the fall.
Right.
The award screener organizations. Yeah, I love it.
Do you think the little boy that's in Boy by Himself would have ever imagined he'd have been, like, you know, a critic?
No, he's awards, looking at himself and like, saying, dang, we should have shot this like Boyhood. Take that, Linklater. You know, I don't know why we didn't do that, you know.
Yeah.
My stupid six-year-old mind was not smart enough to think of, you know, Richard Linklater. Oh, well.
That's all right. All right. So how do you look at films? What's your approach to films as a film critic? And what's your process?
So in terms of process, I used to take a little Charlie Chaplin notebook and take notes in it. But it got, after a while, it was like, well, it's like too dark in the theater. So this, because when I was like going through all my great movies and trying to write all my reviews, I was like religiously like hitting the pause button, stop writing. But when you're in the movie theater, A, it's dark. B, you can't pause it and go back. And so after a while, I was like, you know, I'm just going to take this movie in. And as soon as I get out, then I usually voice memo stuff to me, as I'm walking out or email myself real quick notes. So that's like the, I guess, gritty the process of it. But in terms of just overall philosophy, I love filmmakers. Like, it kind of goes like the film spectrum idea, right? The whole idea is that it's in a spectrum from art to entertainment of movies. And this is my personal belief, and maybe it's not popular in film schools or whatever, but I think it's lazy to do either or. I think a movie should be a gripping, fun, entertaining ride on the surface. Yeah. Why not? Why not try to, you know, reach as many people as you can? But I think it's too lazy because a lot of people are lazy because they stop there. They just want a crazy ride that has no substance or meaning or symbolism or layers to it. I like movies, and that's why I love Hitchcock so much. He was dismissed as this, you know, mainstream popcorn master of suspense. And then once Truffaut sat down with him and all the people at Kaidu Cinema and the New Wave and everything, when they interviewed him and we're looking back 20 years later, they're finding, you know, all this great symbolism in how he constructed his shots and the angles and the colors, you know, reds and greens in Vertigo mean, like, try to look up what that means.
Right.
Not saying it here, but you know, just how movies are constructed with symbolic layers. I am a mise-en-scene freak. Like, I love, and that's why I like slower paced movies that don't cut around so much, because I love being able to scan the back of an image and see what's symbolic stuff. So let's say we'll do Coen Brothers for a second. So in Fargo, we see the vertical blinds of the office over William H. Macy as he's doctoring the forms, and he's ultimately getting, you know, the law is closing in on him. I love that stuff. Or let's say in No Country for Old Men, when Anton Chigurh goes into the cashier and he says, "Call it." Everyone remembers "Call it, friendo," and they remember how scary it was.
Right.
But I love that when you go back multiple viewings, there's all those cords in the back that look like little nooses, like behind the guy. That I almost think that directors can make you subconsciously feel that stuff. Right. And so, yes, the average person isn't going in there and saying, I'm going to look at the mise-en-scene in the back. No, of course not. But as a filmmaker, you can subtly, subconsciously affect people like that. And right. I think that is the genius of movie making. I personally don't think you can totally tell if something's great until you've seen it a couple times. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
Like The Godfather. There's some, you know, everyone sees Luca Brasi get choked out and everyone remembers the line that they say he sleeps with the fishies, right? Mm-hmm. When you watch it again, you see that as they're choking him, Coppola's shooting through the glass with a fish pattern on it. Like,
right.
It's really cool. Right. Or when in part two, and Michael and Fredo are talking and Fredo's laying there and Michael walks in and disowns him because he's already betrayed him, you know. And he's standing there and there's like little life rafts standing at they're at the Lake Tahoe snowy estate. Uh-huh. And there's little life rafts behind Michael, but where Fredo's laying, there's none. So you're like, if you really are following right. it, you're right. like, he's going to die. Spoiler alert from 74. Sorry.
Yeah.
But you should have seen it. But you know what I mean? So like, to me, that's what makes great movies great. Like,
right.
But the caveat is, I also think they should be engaging the first time through, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't see why confuse people.
Right,
know?
Right,
so
right.
I guess maybe I kind of try to straddle that line. I think it's sort of lazy as a filmmaker if you are all arty or if you're all just going to have a fun ride, but I'm not going to have any layers to it.
So yeah.
That's why I like the Hitchcocks and the Billy Wilders and those kind
you
of
can,
guys.
You can just get into...
Kurosawa.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You can just get into their movies and get lost. And like you said, like... I think it's interesting because for the average movie viewer, right, they go to a movie and they just like enjoy themselves and then what's for dinner.
Yeah.
But for us, it's kind of like one of those things where like anytime I watch a movie, it's weird. I come out and I'm like my whole state, my being is yeah. like of that movie. So if it was like Fast and the Furious,
right.
I have to be careful as I drive home. Make sure I obey.
I got a speeding ticket on the way home from Ron Howard's Rush. I'm not joking. I'm not joking.
Exactly. It's just one of those things where we get lost.
Sorry, Georgetown residents.
All right, but really quickly, before we bring this to an end, because I don't want to, but
sure.
where do you get inspiration to keep moving in the industry?
I think it's just the passion for movies. I mean, that's why we get up in the morning. You know, and
yeah.
I guess I should expand it out a little more from movies because I, you know, now it's plays and music and everything else. But I guess sort of the idea of, you know, you're making your life into what you want it to be. You don't have to follow the rules of what everyone else says. You do this and then you go do that and then your career is this and then, you know, let's do a rat race and try to make money because in the end it's, you know, whatever. You can't bring it in the hearse with you, right? So
yeah.
So. Might as well do something you love while you're here and do it every day you can. And that you're fortunate, really blessed now, like I can do it every day. And so I guess, and I kind of love interviewing maybe someone that's sort of up and coming or even if they are established, but like Juliette Binoche last week or whatever, but mm-hmm. like having their art and their message and their themes that they want to talk about to spread that with other people.
Yeah.
I think too many entertainment pages, and I actually don't have any in mind, but, you know, think like TMZ and stuff like that. It's too much about Kardashians and who's dating who and stuff like that. Like, right. to me, that's the People magazine style, you know. To me, I don't think that is what entertainment stuff should be.
Mm.
The original Wiz on Broadway came, and we did an interview, and he said something I'll never forget. He and the director of King Headley at Arena Stage, they said that the root, like if you break down the word entertainment, the root is to hold and to change. And I just, that blew me away. It was almost a spiritual moment. I was like, yes, that's what our entertainment page at TOP and every entertainment critic or whatever should be. It's when you're in there in the theater, you're in the dark, you're forced to live vicariously through this person, whether it's white, black, Asian, Hispanic, you know, you are in those person's shoes,
right,
you know,
right.
The Atticus line. And you get to live vicariously through a perspective you never could otherwise. Mm. And that's why I think it's so powerful.
Yeah.
And so you're literally being held in that space and you're changed when you walk out. And that's what you, like you said, you walk out and you're like, your world's view is different. And so, and combine that with the fact that, you know, film is the ultimate medium, you know, photography, literature, stage, acting, music, it's all there in one. So, I mean, a lot of it's done, a lot of it's crap, but when all comes together, when it comes together and you're watching The Godfather or Vertigo or even if it's like Rosemary's Baby, whatever genre you're in,
right.
you're like, wow, like this is this is what we're living for, you know?
All right, two last things. Last couple questions. All right, so being a film critic specifically in the DMV, is there any merit to it? Do you like it?
Oh, there's merit to it, right?
Yeah.
We're that's our goal, right? We're trying to prove there's merit to it. I mean, I don't think you have to be in a certain part of the country to, you know, to love movies mm-hmm. at all. Not at all. No, I think there's definitely merit to it. Yeah.
All right. So how can people see your work? How can people reach out to you if they do?
Watch this show. Follow Kevin. No. It's WTOP.com. Just click the entertainment page. I have a cover story up there every day. Follow me on Twitter at JFrayWTOP or Facebook or listen to 103.5 FM in your car because it's cycling through every day. Some story or other. You never know you're going to hear. Random celebrity or some local actor. You know, it's the gamut.
All right, Jason, my man. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me. You're the man.
That's all for this episode. I'd like to thank my guests, Jason Fraley, Kendra Rubenfield, and Travis Hare for coming on the show. Big thanks to KJ and Ella for helping me out in the beginning. Major thanks to folks at Marvel Studios for the interviews you heard. You can find Picture Lock on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, and Periscope. All social media is at Picture Lock Show. Watch back episodes of the TV show at youtube.com/picturelockshow. Make sure you subscribe over there so you can always catch the latest of the videos and interviews that I put out. You can download the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Play Music, and other places podcasts are downloaded. Feel free to give the show a hearty review if you're enjoying it as well. Filmmakers, make sure you get your work into the DC Black Film Festival, showcasing quality film, web series, and television content by and about people of African descent. Call for submissions is now open. Visit dcbff.org for details on how to submit and the showcase, which will take place August 17th through 19th in Southeast Washington, DC. I'm really excited to launch this festival as a filmmaker myself. I know that just putting your films into a festival can be a trying task, so it's awesome, and I'm happy to announce that even if you submit but you're not accepted, you're going to walk away with something, whether it's a year to the digital subscription of Videomaker Magazine, 20% off distributor.com. There's all kinds of different prizes that will be won and that just for submitting you will be able to have in order to continue in your craft of filmmaking. So please, dcbff.org. Make sure you submit. Don't forget to check out the website, picturelockshow.com, for movie reviews, news, and to subscribe to our newsletter to get a chance to win tickets for movie screenings in the DMV. If you're interested in being a guest on the show, you can fill out a form on the website and drop me a line if you're enjoying the show as well at picturelockshow@gmail.com. All music is done by Mike S. The Prophet 13. Thanks, bro. I'm Kevin Sampson, and until next time, I hope you stay locked on film. Call for submissions is now open. Visit DCBF. Be quiet, KJ. Visit DCBFF for. Stop. Go to your room, guys. Make sure you go and check it out. I'm sure that it's going to be a smash, $1 million. You probably hit the $1 billion mark within 2 weeks. So I haven't been able to see it yet, but I've heard great things coming out. Go potty.